You are listening to the Experience Points Podcast, the week of April 1st, 2015, and it is no joke, we are back playing Earthbound.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Experience Points Podcast. I'm George Albor.
My name is Scott Juster.
We are the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net, a site dedicated to the serious but not humorless conversation about video games. It's kind of like a little village, maybe a city on the moon.
It's kind of like a neon hellscape.
Today we are continuing our regular Earthbound debriefs. We decided that we would take Earthbound, classic game, cult favorite, if you will, and explore it in depth. We've done, is this our third?
This is third. This is part three.
This is part three.
Yeah.
The threedening.
Yeah. Threed.
Threed. Yeah. Are we past three?
We are past three. Yeah.
So this week on the show, we're continuing our Earthbound conversation. If you are playing along and you want to play along with us, we are going up to Summers in Earthbound. And this podcast in particular is starting off from Saturn Valley. So we've actually worked a good ways into the game.
Yep.
We're maybe about halfway-ish.
When we last left off on the podcast, we had gotten to Saturn Valley.
Just gotten to Saturn.
And I had gotten a little bit past it, and you were figuring out what to do in Saturn Valley.
Yeah, because I was a little lost.
Besides, I get freaked out by those weirdo Mr. Saturn.
By the weird humanoid thing balls.
Humanesque.
And we were talking about the weirdness of the game. Yeah. We were talking about how it's kind of depressing. You know, since we last played the game, you and I have both written articles about the game, too. Yep. So I think that might be an interesting conversation to have today.
Yep.
But starting us off, Saturn Valley, two interesting things immediately happened that I think is what makes Saturn Valley so iconic. I don't think it's the people.
Yeah.
It's, although that's part of it, it's having to wait 3 minutes to get through the waterfall into a cave. So in order to progress, a guy says, go to the waterfall, and the password is waiting 3 minutes and not doing anything.
Yeah, you just have to sit there.
You set your controller aside and you just wait.
Mm-hmm.
By this point in the game, if you think they're kidding, you haven't been paying attention, clearly, right? The moment I saw that, I was like, oh, wow, okay, I'm actually going to have to wait 3 minutes. Now, I timed it. I was like, oh, maybe it'll be 60 seconds, and they'll just be like, just kidding, of course you don't have to wait 3 minutes.
Yeah.
It's the full 3 minutes.
Yeah, gotta sit there.
Gotta sit there.
Did you figure that out? Did you just take a leap of faith and were like, I'm just going to put the controller down for 3 minutes?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't know what I was doing. I talked to the guy who says, you're going to need a password.
Yeah.
I asked around. The guy said, wait for 3 minutes. And I thought, that doesn't sound right.
Yeah.
But let's try it anyway. And I did it.
Yeah.
Thankfully, once you leave that area, you don't have to wait 3 minutes again.
Yeah, that's true. You get there and you're able to get out.
Yep.
And you get inside this, the underground lair, as they call it, where Master Belch is
Master
messing
Belch,
around.
Yeah. More zombies.
More zombies, yeah. I didn't really read too deeply into this one, other than it was kind of a gimmick fight. Like, the moment you use an item, that's like really the key to unlocking it.
Yeah, so the first time I fought him, I didn't use the item, because I didn't know what fly honey was, so I put it in my inventory and just ignored it.
Yeah. But then once you do it, I think he actually stops attacking. Like, I don't think he attacks
again. He
gets,
stuck or something,
He just, gets obsessed with the fly honey or whatever.
Yeah. Well, it's funny, because as you're coming in, they ask you, too, did you bring the fly honey?
Yeah.
You're like, yeah, I got it, bro. Chill.
But, I mean, there's a lot of things in Earthbound like that. Like, where when you had to have the Franklin badge in your inventory to dispel the lightning. And that continues. You can just have the Franklin badge in your inventory, and if someone tries a lightning bolt attack on you, it'll disperse that in battle.
Really?
Yeah.
The problem is inventory space is critical in this game.
Yeah.
You quickly run out.
Are you using Escargot Express at all?
Oh, constantly.
Okay.
Always using it. Yeah, constantly. Yeah. I mean, whenever
You'd think they'd have more than three pockets, but whatever.
You would think. Yeah. Well, I like that when they're dead, when your allies are dead, you still can take all their shit.
Yeah.
I also like the act, by the way, of when you use an item, you can use it, but then give it to someone else.
Yeah.
So it's like Jeff hands a hamburger to Paula, and then Paula eats the hamburger.
Yeah.
That's pretty satisfying. That's a good friendliness going on.
I mean, it is ties into the mechanics of everything is so personal in this game. Like, yeah. It's not just, even like Final Fantasy, like the items are just this bucket of items. Yeah. Like, the items are, that was one of the things I wrote about, where like, you just have to think about the physicality of this game so much, where it's like, okay, whose items are these?
Yeah.
Because if this person faints and they're carrying all my hamburgers, I'm screwed in battle.
Yeah, you will not be able to eat those hamburgers. Like, yeah.
They just disappear.
Yeah. Well, and I found myself holding on to so many of those broken machines, as Jeff, in hopes that overnight he sort of solves them.
Well, and the other thing is, if Jeff's inventory is maxed out, he won't rebuild things because there's nowhere to put them. Because they go right back in his inventory.
Yeah.
And so if you're maxing him out, you can sleep all you want, but he'll never fix anything.
This idiot, Jeff. And, come on.
Seriously, that was what I was... I was like, man, Jeff hasn't fixed anything for a long time. And then I looked at his inventory, and it was completely stocked up. And I was like, oh, okay, I'll get rid of this. And lo and behold, now I have like a laser gun or whatever.
Yeah, so recently I've been playing Bloodborne. You have as well. But
pretty much the same as Earthbound.
I mean, it's not like the similarity of being uncompromising with the...
Yes, the items are like...
The obscurity of what you have to do and how things work is interesting. I mean, there's a commonality there.
Mm-hmm. All right, so you get through that.
We defeat the big Belch man.
You get back to Saturn Valley, and one of my favorite things in the game happens.
Yes.
I'm going to load this up right now so we can talk a little bit about it while the thing goes.
What a place. Here we go. So, someone asks, would you like to have some coffee?
Yeah.
And if you say yes...
Yeah.
A very long song plays. Yeah. 3 minutes and about 20 seconds we're looking at.
I just freaking love this song.
You've traveled very far from home.
You take a sip of coffee and then this weird psychedelic bubble thing just starts up.
The way that the lyrics appear and even the way that the background shifts made me think of karaoke.
Yeah.
Like this is a sing-along experience. Yeah.
Oh, almost. I never made that.
And that idea of like a sing-along experience, I ended up writing last week about this game as a children's game in particular. I think the sing-along experience for this song in particular is also an element of that. Like you sort of, oh, it's fun. You can say it's coming up slowly.
Yeah.
It's not a super interesting song because all it's really doing is just describing everything you've done. But
is it actually like doing any like rhyming or anything? I never really
but it's translated, so maybe they decided to go more literal.
Whatever, the interpretation is interesting because it is like the visualization. It, like the visualizer looks like a cheap karaoke machine.
Yes.
To me, it always was like coffee bubbles almost, like when you're pouring something, like it's a percolating
Paula,
thing.
Who is steadfast, kind, and even pretty.
Even
pretty. Always at your side.
Yeah.
Though he is timid, Jeff, he came from a distant land to help you. That's true.
Yeah. It's just... there are so few games where you take a moment, not even at the end of the game, to reflect on everything that you did up until this point.
Yep.
And think about how far you've come. You know, like, you have an awesome destiny to fulfill. You're like, you're not even close to it.
So I'm going
to
compare this game then to yet another game that you'd be surprised a comparison to, but Journey. There's that moment in Journey.
Yes.
When you see a tapestry.
It is.
Of everything that you've done.
Yeah.
And then what's to come.
Yes.
That is this moment.
It is.
Because this moment, what, 2.5 minutes of the song is just saying what you've done.
Yeah.
And then it's like, now these other things are going to happen.
Yeah.
And you have to get ready. You're about to go on an adventure. But if you try hard, you're going to do it.
Yep.
Inspirational.
Yeah. It's just, and I mean, it's unclear, like, for me, I always thought of, like, this is almost like the voices of Ness's parents or something, like, in his head. Because, like, he doesn't really...
That's a good point, right? Like, whose perspective is this?
Yeah, exactly. Like,
I like to think it's one of the Mr. Saturns.
Well, that's the thing. Like, if you drink Mr. Saturn coffee, are you, like, getting on their level now?
If you drink enough coffee, you physically transform into Mr. Saturn. This is actually their breeding ritual.
And it's like, when you have finished this cup of coffee, your adventure will begin again. Like, it's a weird little... intermission in the quest that you've been on.
I mean, maybe maybe you're right? Maybe this is Ness sort of hallucinating what a good parent might tell him as he's sort of sipping on coffee.
Yeah. Or just like you've now figured out what Mr. Saturn sees, and they see something that is like, for them, time is not a linear progression.
Yeah.
It's like they see kind of the entire picture of the universe or whatever, and so they're telling Ness what's up. I mean, he's saying, like, I wish you luck. Like, who is I? Like what is happening here? Like, there's just so much... there's so much that is hinting at something bigger, but it goes to no lengths to reveal itself, and it is perfectly willing to just sit there and let Ness ponder it.
Can you imagine going to Phil's and be like, "Let me get, let me get like a short, just a short latte." And be like, "Scott, here is your coffee. You're going to work today."
And then, work calls me. It's like, "Scott, where are you? You're 8 hours late." Oh, I'm just thinking about my next quest.
Scott, why do you have all those friendship bracelets on and you smell like weed?
It's just such a... I had forgotten about that part of the game. Yeah. And I just loved that part.
When it was happening... I mean, again, this happens all the time, I think, with Earthbound.
Yeah.
But when it's happening, like, I find myself turning to my sides being like, are you guys... No one else is in the room at this point. But, like, are you guys watching this?
Yeah.
And, you know, I also talked last week about... how I sort of, I think I missed out not playing this game as a kid.
Mm.
I just wonder what it would have been like to talk about this game with friends as a kid.
Yeah.
Like telling them, oh, did you get to the part with the song? No? Oh, I don't want to spoil it for you. Like, yeah. There's something just so like magical in that shared experience too of talking about this game in a way.
Well, I did play it as a child.
How was it? Did you play it? You have a brother, so did you and your brother play it together?
Oh, yeah. I think Eric's probably played it more times than I have because he just likes JRPGs more than I have. But I... Maybe this just means I was a dumb, I was a dumb kid, but...
Well, all kids are dumb, Scott. Come on.
I mean, fair enough, but they... When I was a kid, the conversation around this game was so much more mechanical. It was like, how did you beat this guy? What items did you use? What weapons? Like, the depth of this game, for me anyway, again, I was probably just a slow kid, but it just flew over my head. Yeah. Like, all this stuff that I'm seeing now, like, the poignancy, the metaphors of how the items match up with the, you know, the childlike nature of it, like, all that stuff, I felt like it was kind of lost on me. Like, I felt like it was kind of like the first time I watched Toy Story, and then when I watched Toy Story again as a young adult, and then when I watched Toy Story again today, it's like, wow, well, like, I missed all this stuff.
Do you think that you just sort of grokked some of it, though, right? Like, you know, I think there's a lot of elements in this game that I think make you feel like you're a child.
Yeah.
Right? In the way that the adults talk down to you, or some of the way that the world is sort of obfuscated behind this weird bureaucracy or strange dialogue.
That is a good point. I think that's a good point. I think you pick up on that where it's like, oh, this is different. Like, this isn't someone creating a Swords and Sorcery knockoff RPG. Like, this is something...
This isn't your weeaboo JRPG dating sim.
I mean, but you also have to think about the context in which this game came out. It was smack dab in the Play It Loud era of Nintendo games. Like, they would scream and use, like, you know... Like, no,
yeah, NES!
But, like, no, seriously, the we should dig up some of the commercials for this game, because they're so dumb. It's like, the barf-tacular experience of Earthbound! And, like, this... It was just not... It did not come out in a time and place where video games were meant to be thoughtful reflection. It was around the Play It Loud era.
That's so funny. Even though the game itself is necessarily a thoughtful reflection.
Exactly.
They force you to think and reflect.
I mean, the American marketing anyway.
Yes, of course.
I mean, but like, it just was not... It's just hitting me so much harder this time.
So I wrote a note that maybe you can decipher. I don't know what it means anymore. that note is, "Dinosaur Reacher only knows they're huge."
Dinosaur?
Are there dinosaurs?
Oh, no. You're thinking of... we're skipping ahead a little bit, but I think we're about at the point where you are in Foreside.
Yes.
Because that's where you find the dinosaur that is in the museum.
Oh, you're right. Right. Okay. Yeah.
But let's see if there's anything else in between that. You get back, you do a little soul searching at the sanctuary, which I always really... I just love those sanctuary locations. I just think they're so... mystical in like a really quaint way.
I never know if I've done it, like what I'm there to do.
Yeah.
So I end up sticking around longer than I probably should, but I think that's a good experience.
It's a very... It's the few places in the game that are like completely tranquil. Like there's nothing happening there. You're just there to listen to the music.
Right. There's not even butterflies. Like there's no mechanical benefit there.
Yeah. Other than like hearing that.
Yeah.
So after that, like the coffee foretold, after you destroy all the enemies, you free Threed from the clutches of zombies, which is a good thing.
Yep.
And you head out into the desert.
Right. We should say, by the way, though, Threed is like bright and...
Oh, yeah. It's not as creepy anymore.
Yeah, yeah. I thought that was cool.
Yeah. Kind of a rare thing, I guess. Like they had to like redo all the lighting in that scene or whatever. So you get to the desert, you find, it reminds me a lot of driving down to LA because it's just barren nothingness and traffic jams.
Cactus. Yeah, the traffic jam in the beginning was interesting.
So you got to get out. I remember actually this from playing the game the first time. This was actually one of the more, to me, like disconcerting parts of the game. Because this desert just seems huge.
It is large,
like,
yeah.
Where do you go? Like, it's so easy to get lost in the desert.
Yeah. I mean, I just follow the road like a regular person.
But you know there's stuff out there. It's like, oh, I bet there's cool items, or I bet there's some stuff. And, like, and there is, but it's so big that the screen is completely taken up by desert, so you can't really tell how far you've maybe gone north or south.
There's not even very many markers to use as guidance. Like, you can go all the way up to where there's water, and then on your way down, like, maybe I missed something. Who knows?
I mean, there are things. Like, there's sunbathers out there. Did you find those guys?
Yeah.
Did you find
guy, he's like, oh, I'm not sick. I'm not dead. I'm just getting a tan. You're like, okay, buddy.
Did you find the contact lens?
The contact lens. Yeah. It doesn't ring a bell.
Did you find the dark sesame seed? It's like a tiny 1 pixel wide thing out there.
No, I did not.
There's a lot of weird stuff out in the desert. What
is that
stuff?
Does it do anything?
You can get some stuff in Foresight for it. Nothing is required, but yeah. And also, like, it's one of the few environments that hurts you. Like, you can get sunstroke, and then all of a sudden, you're, like, in a bad way.
Yep.
Poisoned or whatever.
Which threw me off for a while. I found myself ducking in below in, like, underground areas to sort of heal up. Yeah. But there is a shack that lets you sleep for free, which is nice.
Even though that mattress looks sketchy at best.
Yeah, if some random guy is like, you can sleep on my mattress.
Yeah, it's like,
you know what? I'm okay.
And he's like, it's free. You're like, good night.
Good night. Yeah, yeah. Can I get a wake-up call at 7, please?
So you find your way down, you find your way through the desert, rather, and then Foresight. You make your way into Foresight.
The big city. The big apple.
The biggest city you've gotten to yet. And also, it's just...
The city reminds me of Pokemon cities.
Maybe like a size of the buildings or just the perspective. I really like the perspective in Foresight because it makes things feel bigger.
Yep.
You know, like, things are arranged in a diamond rather than kind of the left-right. And it's just amazing how much they do with so little. Like, these are just sprites that are turned in a diamond rather than a perspective of, you know, left-right. Yeah.
The towers are larger. Like, there are parts where you expect to be able to go down an alley, but the hit area is just the building.
There's a lot of, like, clever ways that they keep it big, but really it's not even that big compared to, like, Tucson or whatever.
Yeah. Well, as compared to the desert. I mean, the desert's probably... the biggest environment, I guess.
Yeah.
And maybe it feels big in relation to that, because it does have buildings and space and stuff.
So talk to me about the museum, because this is what you find a museum that has some dinosaurs.
So there's a museum, and a few people will ask you, like, oh, have you gone to the museum yet? And when you go inside, they have exactly one dinosaur skeleton. It's really big. And when you talk to the scientists, all they have to say is that it's huge. Like, that's all they know about dinosaurs.
Yeah.
I thought it was... I mean, so I think that this ties specifically to another moment in Summers that we'll get to later. But I think there's a certain... the game almost, like, infantilizes or satirizes adult life. And it has done that already in a sort of critical, almost spooky way.
Yeah.
But I think at this point it's getting to the comical point.
Yeah.
You know, like, those guys are just idiots. They have no idea. There's one dinosaur and it's just really large.
And they don't even really know what it looks like or if there's more or, like, what to do with it. They just are so proud of themselves that they have this potentially half-complete dinosaur skeleton.
Right. And you get to this too, right? When you end up digging up, when you sort of try to find the diamond inside the mine, but... I get the sense that at first I thought, oh, they're digging up more dinosaur bones. But I get the sense afterwards that actually they're just digging up gold. They're just gold and diamond miners. That's it. They're not interested in actual cool stuff.
Well, Pokey would disagree. He thinks money's pretty cool. Talk to me about Pokey.
I was shocked that Pokey's giving political and economic advice to somebody.
Why? He's shown nothing but good judgment up until this point.
Pokey... We should talk about Pokey later, because he, like, fucks you at some point.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
yeah, he does. He is the worst.
Pokey has ensconced himself in the tallest building of Foresight and is somehow...
The Manitoli building.
The Manitoli building, and is somehow now a trusted advisor of the richest, most powerful man in town.
And I don't know how that happened. Yeah. This seems
Well,
to
we
me...
do later.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
After we...
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, exactly.
His dad is there as well. Yeah. His dad is brought along. And his dad also seems like, I don't know what's happening, but my son is here, so I'm here.
Yeah.
It felt like Richie Rich or something.
Oh, yeah.
Like a weird bit. Sort of kid story where you dream, oh, I'm a big, important hotshot.
Mm-hmm.
He's also just a dick to Ness.
Oh, yeah. So. Always. At every turn.
Pokey's always an asshole.
Yeah.
I kicks hope he him gets, out. Like... I mean, don't spoil it or anything, but I hope he gets his comeuppance. I
violently murder him.
I want him to die. What if he's like Gigas the whole time?
As I say, I will say nothing.
Okay. Ooh, interesting.
But the other people that are maybe more interested in money than dinosaur fossils are the Runaway Five.
God, those guys, like, they really need to get their finances in order.
They need a business manager.
They really need a business manager. I mean, I like this because I was like, oh, I already did this. I now would know what I have to do.
Yeah.
So, of course, you go back to the desert.
Yeah.
Explore the cave a bit.
The Runaway Five are in the exploitative contract once again.
Is it a million?
It's $1 million.
That's absurd.
Rather than 10,000 that it was in the podunk town of Tucson.
Side note, can I say, when you do finally watch the five play music again, once again, there are six of them on stage.
There's like another keyboardist or whatever.
Yeah, weird.
I like the Runaway Five shows because it's, again, it's one of those reflective, meditative moments almost, where it's like, in the context of Earthbound, it's actually really fun and clever, even though it's just a couple sprites dancing around. They just do funny things with them.
I also like that you can go see it again.
I know. You can just buy it as many times.
Yeah.
I mean, they're stuck there until they pay off $1 million debt. So wouldn't it be crazy? This would be a Kojima-level troll, where if you paid $30 per show and added up to $1 million.
Oh, like, my God. That's genius.
I don't know if anyone's ever tested that. I highly doubt. But if Kojima made it, you could definitely do that.
That would be amazing.
So I
but I mean, because the managers take a cut, the staff.
No, that's true. You'd never pay down the principal of that debt.
Exactly. Yeah.
Mr. Businessman gets you, screws you either way. but in order to save them, you head on out to the dig site where they're looking for gold or riches or whatever. I actually felt like this was a fairly difficult area.
Yeah, next to the beginning part, this was the grindiest section.
But I think purposefully, because the part immediately after this is super difficult.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So it's like, it's this weird little, like, we're going to prepare you for this next one that's extremely hard by making you walk through this maze forever.
Yeah. I also really like that all the moles say that they are the third strongest mole.
Yes, it's great. I also think that they might not all be of equal strength.
Yeah, oh, I don't think so. Yeah. I bet you there actually is a primary mole.
So you go into this mine, evil moles have taken it over, they're all bosses, five of them, but when you confront them, they each say that they're the third strongest mole.
Yeah. They're like, oh, get ready, now you'll hear the power of the true third strongest.
Yeah, and some of them are like, I'm in between the second and fourth strongest.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Each one of them has a different way of saying it, and from what I can tell, for no reason. Like, it's just a weird thing in the game. Like, I don't know why they do it.
This also is an area where you find a lot of new items to add to your inventory. Mm. Like, there's bigger bombs that do really cool stuff. I feel like a lot of the game gets fleshed out here mechanically just because you are spending so much time there. So I didn't feel like I was cheated. I don't think I got super frustrated.
Yeah.
I felt like the pacing for this game, like we said last time, really picked up in this section as a whole.
Yeah.
This was the slowest part, but it didn't make me ornery or anything.
I think all this fighting in the caves gets you used to the fact, or gets me used to the fact, that you just have to spend psychic points to win. Because you have very few psychic points, actually, like, compared to a lot of other RPGs. Like, you can only cast a handful of spells until you level up.
And up until, I think, past this point, you don't have any means of recuperating them in combat.
There's, like, every once in a while you get a Psy Caramel or something, but those are, like, you get a couple of those.
Yeah.
Like, that's it. And then if not, you have to hope that Paula can use her Psy Leech ability or whatever. Yeah. And
this is like when you buy those like candies and you really like the nuts and you only get like two.
Yeah, you're like,
come on, guys.
Judiciously, you know, do I really want to waste it when I'm fighting this ant? Like, probably not. You know, I should just run, or I should just do whatever.
Yep.
I definitely died a couple times here, but it's like, you know, you make silly mistakes, or I sometimes put it on auto fight and I walk away, get a drink, and realize that something terrible happened.
My like, problem in the cave is I just got lost. Like, I defeated four and then didn't know where I was going.
It's definitely one of those things where you have to, like, systematically take every path where it's like, okay, I'm just going to take every left, and now I'm going to go left, 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 right, and now I'm going to go left, 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 right, right. You know, you just have to keep
going. My spatial logic is... Well, and then the worst, of course, is, you know, you have to, sometimes you'll get so low that you have to go back.
Yeah.
Coming back in respawns all of the enemies, so going through that same sort of loop is frustrating.
Yeah. But eventually you find, you destroy all the moles.
Yep.
You let them resume their digging.
You get a sweet, sweet diamond.
you get a fat rock.
You get a big old some bling.
It's also a funny thing where like it's not quite clear what's happening, and you're like, well, I guess I'll walk back to Foreside, and then all of a sudden some dude rolls up in a bulldozer and is like, oh, look what I found.
Take this $1 million diamond. At that point, I was like, if there wasn't a world to save, I'd just
retire. I'd buy one of these mansions in Foreside and live out my days. You see one last show at the Runway Fives gig with
a special guest star.
And then
Rita Hayworth.
You got to figure out what next to do. And the department store opens up, the thing that's been creepily closed this whole time. Uh-huh. And this to me actually was the hardest point in the game.
Yes,
for me.
Yeah, no, like, for me as well. This was also one of the most surprising moments.
Yeah.
You mean an alien that flies out, and like we know that the Manitoli building is there.
Yeah.
So my thought was like, I just got to go over to the Manitoli building at some point. Pokey will change his mind or something.
Yeah.
In the meantime, let me go to the department store. Mm. I shop. I do my thing. Which, by the way, you buy weapons from like shady dealers in like back storerooms. Mm-hmm. Pretty weird.
I mean, it's the same guy who like hangs out behind the shops and he's just is like hanging out inside of a freaking You want a bomb?
You want a baseball bat? it's illicit goods, they say.
Yeah.
You get to the top, the lights go out,
yep.
And Paula gets kidnapped again. Jeez, Paula.
Yeah. The enemies are just very hard. Like, the electric guitar enemies, the enemies that show that fire the thunderbolts at you.
Yes.
And if you have the Franklin badge, it disperses all of that. Yeah.
Because it's status effects. Like, mm-hmm. They'll put you to sleep and then mess you up time and again. They're the Marlboros of the NES universe, if you will. And the worst thing is, by far, Paula is the strongest character in the game. I mean, Ness is great and all, but
her psi freeze
is absurd.
Yeah.
The amount of damage it does to like single enemies is absolutely bonkers.
Yep.
To not have her is a significant hit, and you don't have her for a good long while.
Yeah, yeah. And so it's just you and Jeff and maybe a teddy bear if you're lucky.
If you're lucky. Well, so I gave the teddy to Paula
because Paula was
like, oh, Paula's the strongest. I'll give the teddy bear to Paula.
Yeah.
Fucking Paula takes the teddy bear with her.
So you,
looking for my bear Tibbers over here.
you defeat the alien. He just continues to lead you on this path of something is up with Monotoli.
Yep.
And then you just have to start doing some more sleuthing. At this point, you've already kind of known something is up with him. Like, the police say that, like, the police are serving Monotoli first and the citizens second. Like,
well, and also
all the people work for him.
And the fact that you can't see him at all.
Yeah, he's like, just Pokey weird.
Is sort of the man between you and Monotoli.
Yeah. Had you been to the Foreside Cafe before you had?
I had, yeah. Gone in?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have a feeling that whole thing is just localized and it's actually a bar in Japan. And
it looks like a bar.
Well, and plus the drunk businessman is there, like the ruddy faced business guy. Like, and they always talk about like, oh, I drank too much latte and I had to race to the bathroom. Like all that stuff is like, okay, they just had to localize this for mid 90s ESRB ratings.
Yeah, that's certainly true. There's a jukebox.
Yeah, it's very much. I don't know. It just feels like something that is like a holdover from when Nintendo used to be strict about those types of things.
Yep.
And so they tell you a lot of rumors. I thought Monotoli was one of these people.
That's what I thought too. Because it's like, oh, there's a weird guy who's here.
Yeah, me too. But there's plenty of other weird people in Earthbound. They tell you some creepy things about maybe there's some false doors in areas.
Yep.
And then the other thing that makes me think that all of this is just a cover for being drunk is that you find...
a drunkard outside?
Yeah, you find a guy who's collapsed in an alleyway.
Well, so I thought, my first thought, because he's in the back alleyway, was, oh, he's been mugged and like stabbed or something.
Yeah.
And you talk to him and you talk to the crowd and they're like, oh my God, he's there. This is one of the funniest moments in the game.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I thought for sure, it's like, he's dead.
Yeah.
He gets up and leaves, but before he leaves, it's like, just please don't follow me.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going anywhere. Just don't follow me.
Yeah.
And then he just leaves.
And then all the crowd around him is like, oh, he lurched towards me, or he almost came at me. Like, this guy's just like a town drunk. You know,
two and two together, but I think you're right. He is just a drunk.
Yeah. And he's the guy that you got the 10,000 bucks from in Tucson. But he tells you that there's something weird going on. There's a statue.
Yeah, what else is that?
I mean, and you've encountered these weird statues before.
The cultists had one.
Yeah, so you definitely know something is afoot. And you know, you hear a little bit about, okay, well, now there's some sort of, you know, there's some sort of false door somewhere in the cafe, and you have to like search around for it.
Yep.
Did it take you a while to find? Like,
a long
while. Oh, I knocked on every door.
I poked around a lot. I ended up looking it up, to be honest. I was like, I don't know what is happening. I thought I was doing it wrong. I kept going back to Manitoli Tower and wasting like elevator trips.
Oh yeah.
Because I thought like maybe this clue was there. I don't know. Anyway.
By the way, the lady who keeps on telling you to stop staring at her or him
and her butt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just weird.
Super like, weird.
I mean, you don't. And then that throws into question what type, like, because Ness is a silent protagonist. Like, is Ness just kind of like a, you know, a pervy kid, or is this person actually just saying it? Like, there's just a lot of like. It throws into question what type of person Ness is to me
in my head. I think that she's just saying it. Like,
it's just strange.
My butt. Like, yeah. She's being weird.
I mean, it would be fitting in the game, but it's like...
You know, in my mind, Ness is a silent protagonist necessarily makes everybody else the weird ones. Like, Ness is the most normal person there is, period. Because there's nothing about him. It's everyone else that's bizarre. Which
yes.
I think that alienation that creates is exactly the point.
Yeah, because you are just trying to be normal and everyone else is reacting in a strange way.
Right.
So you find, this is actually another mechanical thing that I meant to ask you about. When you are talking to people and checking things out, are you pressing the L button or are you bringing up the menu?
I always press the L button.
Okay, yeah. It's just a thing that I'm not sure if they ever explained it to you, but...
No, I stumbled upon it because I was looking how to save using the Wii U tablet.
And so you're like pressing every button on the Wii U tab, and all of a sudden there's like this dual purpose button that no one tells you about.
And every time you look at something, and it's so easy because you go up to something, press the button,
yeah.
and you know, you inspect it basically.
Yeah. I don't know why they don't make that clear. I don't know. That's just like a weird off topic thing.
Yep.
So you go through the door. You apparently take a weird tab of acid or something because even stranger things start happening.
I mean, presumably someone spikes your drink, right?
Well, they explain it later, saying the statue causes hallucinations.
Yeah, I know. I think someone spiked your drink.
Because, I mean, you walk through the door and everything is neon. There's no texture on anything. It's just outlines of buildings.
You were talking about, like, alcoholism. Do you think that maybe he just got drunk?
I mean, it's
like
a metaphor,
in a bar, right?
Yeah.
He just drinks a beer and then, whoa, I'm a kid, I'm drunk.
I mean, that's the thing. Like, are the cultists, are they really being controlled by a statue, or are they just giving in to groupthink, like the way all cults work? You know, like,
Is Manitoli just like a corporate figurehead trying to like get a quick buck from it or something?
Exactly. I mean, like, all of this is kind of a metaphor for just acting strange and what causes people to act strange.
Yeah.
And so it is fitting that this is hidden in a bar where there's a bunch of people that are just talking about making bad decisions because they're drunk.
Yeah.
I had completely forgotten about Moonside.
That was the next most surprising thing to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just had forgotten about this part of the game.
I really enjoy Moonside.
Yeah.
I think it's one of my favorite parts in the game.
Yeah.
Quickly, early on, you meet someone that says, this is basically like backwards town.
Mm-hmm.
Yes means no and no means yes.
Yeah.
Do you understand?
Yeah.
If you say yes, they'll go, well, what don't you understand?
Yeah.
If you say no, they go, okay, great. I'm glad that you understand. Continue on. All of the questions in this area, that rule applies.
Mm-hmm.
It's this weird, like, I mean, again, it goes back to being a kid, right? Where you had, like, today's opposite day, and you'd sort of, like, foolishly make this joke about, oh, what you say, I'm going to take to mean the exact opposite, right?
Yeah.
It's this level of wordplay that kids are really into, because it's usually at an age where they're starting to understand how words work, they can make their own sentences, they're able to make comical sentences, and paradoxes with their words, right? It's a fun experience. I think this is that area, like, writ large, right?
Yeah,
where everything
is
super colorful. Everything is a play on words. There's this part where a guy says, oh, you need a man with a hat and a mustache or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And you end up we've been encountering this like invisible man, and he describes himself in that way.
Yeah, he's like, oh, I got a gold tooth and a
big old handlebar mustache, and I look like, you know, Lou Ferrigno or something. And that lets you progress. But that itself, I think, is like a comical experience, right? It's like you're sort of imagining, you have an imaginary friend for a minute, and you're describing what he looks like.
And it's clear that, like, there is a guy who's blocking your path that wants to talk to this person,
right,
who you can't see, but it's clear that this person's just following you around because he makes comments every once in a while when you're walking around.
Hey, I just want to, you know, I'm still here.
Yeah.
Like, okay. Cool.
And you're being warped around by powers that you can't control. You're not quite sure where to go. There are invisible walls everywhere.
Yeah. There are new enemies that are like basic, like traffic signs and fire engines. Which, by the way.
Yeah.
Going back to your drunk idea, maybe you're stumbling into the city and you're bumping into these things.
I mean, and you're fighting like weird, like Dali-esque melting clocks.
Oh, yeah,
and
melting
like,
paintings.
I mean, it's just, this is a. It just seems like an intoxication.
Yeah,
you know, fantasy or whatever.
I like that theory.
But yeah, and like you're stumbling into stuff that you shouldn't be avoiding. It's funny because I actually did not find the enemies hard at all in this area.
No.
Like I was basically auto-fighting my way through this whole thing and like taking care of it pretty easily. And you still don't have Paula. You have no clue where Paula is.
Yep.
And so you're just completely alone. You're alone in this place, and like Paula was your first companion, and it just feels empty to me. Like you're so used to having three people.
Well, but Jeff and Ness are bonding now.
They're broing out. So I thought that
the
was
guy talk.
It was super funny when you had the invisible guy. The invisible guy helps you, make friends with the person who wants to meet him inexplicably. Who knows why? And then he lets you into the boss, which is the Mighty Manny statue.
Yep.
Which again, I don't think was too hard.
No, I don't think so.
There was one battle that I fought where I really goofed, and like I didn't have like something happened. Oh, maybe it was this one. Maybe it was another battle, but everyone was feeling weird or was feeling strange.
Huh.
And that means that you will accidentally attack other people.
Oh, so you were killing yourself.
Yeah. And so I had to do very weak attacks because I might accidentally attack someone else.
Right.
Because your psi powers will also attack you.
But not weapon, not item use. Right?
I don't know. Because you can accidentally psi yourself. Like, you can do PSI rockin' beta on your entire party, and then you're screwed.
That is
like,
awful.
It just destroys you. And so I had to, like, be really.
But they're rockin', though.
So they are rockin'.
They have that going for them.
I may have been this one, but I had to just be really judicious.
Yep.
Oh, actually, you know what? It was a later one. It was because it's mushrooms. I was completely mushroomed.
You were tripping out on mushrooms.
Every person had a mushroom growing out of their head in my party, and
the moment I get them, I cure them. It's never been an issue for me.
It happens in battle, and it happened to each of my people before I could get around and cure them.
Yeah.
And that was it. For the rest of the battle, I had mushrooms.
Wow.
But anyway, yeah. So you fight the statue, and then it's revealed that you were just in the stock room the whole time.
Yep.
Which I guess makes sense. You're not actually like...
You're just drunk.
Yeah. I mean, you wake up in the stock room.
The statue is there, though.
The statue's there, and you break the statue, theoretically then breaking its power, I suppose. But yeah, I mean, it's... And even still... You cannot get Paula back.
Yep.
Like, you have to do some more stuff before you do.
You gotta go hang out with monkeys and stuff.
Gosh, that was a strange... Did you... So, you leave the bar, and a monkey runs up to you.
Yeah, it's like, what's up?
And starts yelling about weird guys in a cave in the desert.
Well, isn't it the female monkey that's, like, ends up hooking up with it Jeff's
is.
Monkey?
Yeah, it is. It is the spouse of Jeff's monkey.
You know, because she has a pink headband thing.
That is true. Had you met the sensei or whatever that was in the cave?
Yeah, the floating guy. Yeah. I wrote in my notes, he's a floating KFC man because he looks like Colonel Sanders.
Yes, he's the Kung Fu KFC master.
Yep, I had met him once before. And then you go meet him again, but you first have to bring things to the monkeys.
He's kind of like... this is like... It is a Kung Fu tale... Told through a Japanese interpretation of kind of Americana folklore.
Yes.
And so you have this weird little kind of like drunken master slash like, you know, kung fu monkey type
bring
character.
Me this. Yeah.
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 But it's also told through like several other cultural lenses to distort it by the time you're getting to it.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, so the cave is full of monkeys. The monkeys want items. I think almost like all...
puzzle.
Yeah, almost all the items are actually in treasure chests.
Yeah, most of them you get there. I think you have to go buy... I had to buy a picnic lunch, but I think that was it.
Yeah, but it's one of those things that's kind of like the mole dungeon, which is like...
You're going back and forth.
Yeah, it all looks the same, too. So you have to remember, like, okay, I'm going to do all lefts and then a right, and then I'm going to do three lefts and then a right.
It was like left, left, right.
Right.
I thought that was kind of fun, though. It had a sort of Indiana Jones vibe, like, oh, I'm sort of solving, going through this labyrinth.
Yeah.
Why the weird floating KFC man had a monkey labyrinth in the first place, not entirely clear.
I still haven't used the bag of Dragonite
that you get. No, I don't know what it's... Four.
I looked at it and it says it turns one of you into like a crazy dragon during battle.
Yes!
And then, but I was like, okay, I need to save this until I
really
need it
or something, right?
But then I also don't want to carry it around. Like, you know, it's just like a precious item.
I'll use it. I'll just turn myself into a fucking dragon for no reason.
But, and then again, going back to like the kung fu thing, like you learn a mystical power of teleportation from the monkeys. And now...
Well, but real quick, though.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
The KFC guy mentioned someone named Pooh.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah.
And I was like, who the hell is Pooh?
Yeah.
This is another, like, weird Saturn moment.
Yeah.
I did end up getting spoiled it for me, and I'm not going to spoil it here, but I was like, this is weird. I don't know who Pooh is. Also, it's the word Pooh, which isn't necessarily funny.
It's just a non sequitur, but he tells it to you as if it will be important or you should know about it.
Yeah, it's like, oh, you, Jeff, Paula, and Pooh. You guys are just going to go for grand old time.
You're like, excuse me?
Yeah, like, excuse me?
It's like, by the way, Paula is still kidnapped, sir. Do you have any help?
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, I don't trust the floating KFC man anyway.
That is true. So he teaches you, or the monkey teaches you
how to teleport yourself. Yeah. That's a really useful ability.
It is. Well, and now you know why...
Although I crashed into things like dozens of times.
But now you know why Ness's entrance in Super Smash Bros. Is that like blast and then he becomes all dark.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah,
like... Oh my gosh. I was trying to pinpoint it because I kept being like blackened.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't know what that does or what that means.
So he just like smacks into something and then he's like... Bark! And so that's his intro in Smash Bros.
Very nice.
It's crazy. There's like little tiny touches that they do. But and the other funny thing is you have to have a lot of runway to do it. You know, like you got to be on a long road in order to.
I mean, even in towns, like you end up walking around the town looking for.
Yeah.
Because I went back to Onet to visit my mom.
Oh man.
Yeah. Because I was like, I'm gonna make an actual appearance. Nothing really happens, but it was nice.
Did you see King? The dog was hanging out there.
Yeah,
too?
But he still was like, I'm never going outside again.
Yeah.
But it's nice. Like you go home, she whips you up some Mexican.
Yeah.
You could take a free nap. It's better than the desert hobo bed.
It is.
I'll tell you what.
It is true. So, did you do any more traveling besides your mom? I didn't really travel anywhere else.
Yeah, I did actually, because I remember Winters
had
some items I couldn't get, and there was like a special place. So I actually went back to Winters. I ended up buying a bunch of items that were like good, but I think that was it. There's no way to get Nessie again.
Oh yeah.
So that was disappointing.
Yeah. Another one of those kind of reflective moments in the games where you're just. Jeff is just riding this dinosaur.
Yep.
And thinking about leaving his life behind.
He probably should.
Yeah, he doesn't have a great relationship with his
dear old dad.
So there's some other stuff that you need to do in order to kind of get access to where you think Paula is being held, which is at the top of the Monotoli building. You have to get Pokey's maid, who may or may not be a replicant, according to people in town.
What? I didn't pick up on that.
So didn't you talk to the guy who's saying, like, his maid or his servant or whatever, her name is Electra, and she is built to order, and, like, there's, like, all these weird hints that she may be a robot or something.
I thought that was, like, a weird sexual thing or something.
Well could be, but it could also be she's a robot. Also, you fight lots of robots in the Monotoli building.
Interesting. See, now you have, like, a theory going on.
So,
oh, my God.
So she very well
Battle
could
droids?
Be... She could be a skin job, and you don't even know.
Sure.
Like, and she wants a weird yogurt dispenser that the Apple Kid makes. Or maybe it's the Orange Kid. Is it the Apple Kid? I think it is the Apple Kid.
Yeah, well, at this point, she also, like, the yogurt is, like, trout-flavored yogurt.
Yeah. Don't know what that means.
I would try that. I'll try that.
I mean, in Berkeley, you could probably find that.
That's probably true.
But the, I think it's Apple Kid sends it to you, but like, you know, coach class or whatever.
Yeah. So is this the point though, where he tells you like, oh, he calls you and is like, I have to go. I'm not going to be around. I'm not coming back. Like, he leaves dramatically at some point.
Yeah. That, I think
maybe
this
it's
is
to
this
go make
point.
The machine, yeah.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's after the machine.
Well, he, I think he says, I'm going to go, I got to go make something. And then he, and then he just leaves. And like Orange Kid is still like, oh, don't worry, I'm making something. Orange Kid. He never makes you anything.
Does he not make you anything?
I mean, so far, I don't know.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, but like Apple Kid is
I hope
like,
at the end it's just orange juice.
Apple Kid's coming through left and right. Like everything that he makes is gold. Like
yeah.
You have to use the pencil eraser, like
Do
all
this
stuff.
Do you think they changed the name to Apple because of the Apple computers?
Man, I didn't even think about that.
I'm just saying.
God. And
it could be Intel Kid.
And that kid's Apple Kid was named Steve Jobs.
But yeah, at the very end, he's like, what's your real name?
Holy crap. So Orange Kid is like kind of the more corporate looking, glasses wearing, big seller, like salesman type.
Yeah.
And Apple Kid is the grungier, nerdier
inventor.
That's the Woz.
Yeah.
That's Wozniak, and Orange Kid is Jobs.
Yeah, and Steve Jobs isn't really doing anything yet.
Yeah, he's the marketer. Steve Jobs is the vision of the thing, and Woz is the one that's actually making all this
shit. I don't think that's true in the game.
Holy shit, though!
That's true, yeah.
But, like, the archetypes are there, like...
Sure.
Jesus.
95?
Whatever, that was like...
The year of Windows 95, people.
That the
Wake up, people. Parkbound is the history of Apple computers.
God, if you look carefully, you can see the beginnings of the Apple Watch.
Earthbound iOS Watch 2016.
iEarth. God, that's crazy. Anyway, you get the trout-flavored yogurt maker.
Yeah, you fuck him up. Pokey's an asshole.
Yeah, you
steals your helicopter.
I mean, you get the maid, who may or may not be a robot, lets you get up there.
Have you eaten the trout yogurt yet, by the way?
No, because I just gave it to her.
Oh, you can get some.
I didn't even get any.
Oh,
I just got it and like gave it to her.
I think I have some in my inventory.
What?
Maybe I don't. I'll check when I get home. I'm pretty sure I have yogurt.
I missed out.
I might have sold it, actually, now that I think about
this
it.
This is the most valuable yogurt. Yes, so you get up there. Paula is basically just like, okay, what's your reading on this situation? She's up there with Mr. Montatoli. He's an old man.
She doesn't seem mad.
No.
She seems like she's just hanging out.
Yeah.
Like, almost like she pities this guy.
Exactly. Yeah. That's what I got from her. She was like, oh, this is someone who is old. He doesn't really have any friends.
It feels like Montatoli, almost like he fell for something.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
exactly.
I mean, it's kind of sad in a way, right? Like, and Pokey, too. He steals his fucking helicopter.
Mm-hmm.
He's a total jerk.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel bad for the guy.
Yeah.
And I don't think Paula's, like, holding a grudge.
Yeah.
This was not, like, this didn't border on that, like, creepy that the kidnapping for the cultists had.
Yes,
this
was
a sort of a different motivation. I'm not sure what his motivation was for kidnapping her at all.
Well, I mean, he was under the spell.
Sure,
of
but why Paula? Why not kidnap Ness or Jeff?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, Paul's been kidnapped before. People are just
got
unlucky.
The experience. Yeah,
I viewed it as like it was all of a sudden less malicious and just more sad when you figure out this guy is isolated and alone and seems to just have made a big mistake.
Yeah.
It's a strange thing. Pokey takes off. You're about to use the helicopter to get to the next town, but Pokey takes off instead.
Pieces out.
And so you have to go to your other flying machine, which you've crash landed in a cemetery back in Threed.
Yep.
You do that. Jeff's able to fix it up enough to get it to the doctor.
Dr. Andonuts.
Yeah. Don't call him Jeff's dad.
This was the saddest part, I think.
So far, yeah.
Because at one point Jeff says, oh, my dad, I mean Dr. Andonuts.
Yeah.
Like, the fact that he slips up and then feels ashamed that he called his dad because he doesn't think that there's that love there.
Yeah.
That's fucking dark, dude. Yeah. And then, like, Dr. Andonuts tells Ness that Jeff wets his bed.
Yeah.
Like, it sucks, man. Like, Jeff has a really shitty father.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and also, so one of these things.
He gets his just desserts too.
Yeah.
I'm not talking trout yogurt, everybody. Trout frozen yogurt.
I mean, you'll. you have the option to just talk to him for a little while. You can get some experience.
There's like a big caveman that will give you stuff.
Right. You can sell, but I mean, the point while the doctor is fixing up your flying machine, your flying saucer, you swing by one of the other sanctuaries and you know, get another one of the tunes. And after you come back, the doctor says something slightly different. Like, he says something about, like, oh, Jeff used to wet his bed, don't you know, Ness? And then he's like, oh, Jeff, I see... He says something like, I see in your face something has changed, or you know something now, or, like... He says something, like, slightly different. Like, there has been some recognition of Jeff is now somewhat independent. Maybe they're actually growing apart.
Like, I can see in your eyes you want to beat me up, and that makes you a man, son, and that means I succeeded as a father.
It's just a very you never have satisfactory closure to it, which is one of those, you know, you go back, it's like, okay, maybe Jeff will prove something now. It's like, maybe only slightly. Like, maybe only in the subtext that they're talking to each other.
I mean, like, you know, I remember, this is another great moment of being a kid. And I think this is, you know, I have my own personal history with family, but I think everybody has a story like this where they bring a friend over and something embarrassing happens or something fills them with shame of like, oh, I didn't want them to come over because they would see this reality about my family.
Right.
And how stressful that is.
Yep.
And like upsetting that can be. I think it's cool that the game puts you in that scenario where you feel like you've accomplished all this stuff. Like, you feel really good about yourself as a player.
Yeah.
And then someone just undermines you like that.
Yeah. Someone just talks about you wetting the bed.
Like, Jeff is your fucking bro, man. Yeah. Like, he helped you in Moonside. Yeah. You got Paula back. Like, there was a song that Mr. Saturn sang about you of a cup of Joe. You're good peoples, right? You're brave. You're awesome. You can do this. And your dad's like, he wets the bed.
Yeah.
But other than that, he's okay.
Yeah.
What an asshole.
Yeah.
Like, ugh.
Yeah. And he's just isolated up there. His only friend is a weird caveman. He has a Vita chamber.
Good riddance. He has a Vita chamber, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and that's pretty much where we're at. You board the flying saucer. Yep. You land in a... sunny Summers on the beach. Very tropical looking.
There's a guy who looks like he's like a Mexican guy selling like beach food.
Mm-hmm.
He only sells gelato. And he says, I have tons of options. All he's got is gelato.
That's any resort town. That's pretty much true. It. Also, the prices are crazy there. Like, it's just it's just a very funny thing. So we're up to Summers. This is where we are. We're gonna trek on a little bit more, and we'll tell people what to do for the next time. But where are we at right now? What are you thinking?
I think that, and I mentioned this in the post, and you mentioned it in your post. But at this point, I think I'm 100% certain that this is a masterpiece. I think this game is amazing.
Yeah.
I've never seen a game like be this weird, but also be this like embracing of the like the act of being in that in that environment of experiencing the world from the perspective of a kid, from the perspective of like, I don't know what's going on. Yeah. There's some things that are scary. There's some things that I just don't understand, right? Yeah. Like, there's a moment in Summers where all these adults are having like complex conversations, and it's all rubbish. Like, they're all just making bullshit up, right? But that experience, I think, is important because that's the perspective you might get as a child of adults who are basically just doing futile stuff, you know? And in a way, you know, I'm almost changing my mind in a bit, but I do think this game is for adults in the perspective of being able to see from a kid's perspective how silly being a grown-up is
in
a lot of ways, right?
A lot of futility.
Yeah, be it like, you know, what you find to be important in life, you know, like the way that you pursue knowledge, right? Like, if you don't pursue knowledge, then all you know is that there's a dinosaur and it's big, right? Or the way that you can be fooled by alcohol or money, you know, or get in debt. And why would this person even want to make the five singers be indentured servants anyway, right?
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of this sort of animosity towards human beings being assholes to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that even Pokey resembles that, I think, is probably the most cutting thing about Pokey.
Yeah.
Is that he behaves in the way that all the adults have, but he doesn't have the excuse that he's just being hypnotized.
Yeah. I mean, up until this point, he could be the dark future, basically, of what Ness is looking at.
It's just really good, and it's just something that you don't see. And I have a hard time understanding how this game could be made, but not from the perspective, oh, it's just weird anymore.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
From the perspective of, like, someone, Itoy, I guess, in this case, like, just put a lot of thought into it.
Yeah.
In a way that I don't think I understood when I first started playing, but I think I get more and more as I can go along.
Yeah, yeah. Well said. Well said. I completely agree. And you know, I don't know. It's so hard to tell how far we are because sometimes the game speeds up and sometimes the game slows down.
Yeah, the pacing is kind of weird.
But I mean, there's still somebody named Pooh out there.
There's still a fat Pooh somewhere.
Pokey,
it could not be fat. It could be a skinny Pooh.
Pokey is flying around in a stolen chopper somewhere, so we have plenty of ground to cover.
Does his dad know how to fly a chopper? Like, what exactly is going on there?
We got plenty of ground to cover, so we'll get back into it, and we will tell people where we're going to land next within the next couple episodes or so.
Good segue, Scott.
We will be looking for your comments at experiencepoints@gmail.com
and experiencepoints.net. You can also leave your comments there. And if you want to help fund our trout yogurt making business here in Berkeley, do pay us a visit. Share the actually this doesn't fund anything, but spread the yogurt love.
It's a viral marketing campaign.
Come on down to Scott and George's Trout Yogurt Farm.
Yeah.
ExperiencePoints.net.
Don't leave home with trout it.
Oh, I like it. Something fishy is going on here. iTunes and Stitcher, you can leave us our pun reviews.
Don't do that.
We're also on YouTube, exp.net.
Yeah. All right. And until next time, everyone, thank you very much for listening. We will be talking to you next week.
Fuzzy Pickles.
Every time.